Unit 16, Freedom Movement and Government of India Act 1919. Page 43. Structure 16.0, Objectives 16.1, Introduction 16.2, Background of the Government of India Act 1919. 16.3, Montfort Reforms. 16.4, Achievements. 16.5, Failure. 16.6, Criticism. 16.7, Let us sum up. 16.8, Self-assessment questions. 16.9, Books for further study. Page 44. 16.0, Objectives. After reading this unit, you should be able to understand the significance of the Government of India Act 1919 was enacted on 23rd December 1919 on the basis of Montfort scheme. Montague Edwin Samuel, 1879-1924, was the Secretary of State for India from 1917-1922 in Lloyd George's ministry. On August 20, 1917, he made from his place in the House of Commons the important declaration that the British government's policy in India was the progressive realization of the responsible government in the country. With a view to the implementation of this policy, he visited India in 1917-18, toured over the country in the company of Lord Chelmsford, the Viceroy, and took the leading part in drawing up the report on the constitutional reforms in India, the main principles of which were embodied in the Government of India Act 1919. Further, you will be knowing in this unit that the Government of India Act of 1919, also known as the Montfort Reforms, contains 6 parts and 47 articles. The preamble of the Act laid down the principles on which the reforms were said to be progressively implemented in India. The Act introduced certain changes in the existing authorities of the Home Government. 16.1, Introduction. The Morley Minto reforms had failed to give the Indians a responsible government, and during the First World War, they agitated for such reforms in recognition of their services. Lord Montague, then the Secretary of State for India, made an important announcement that the policy of the government was the gradual development of the self-governing institutions, with the object realizing responsible for the government of India. In pursuance of this policy, the Montague reforms were introduced in 1919. The Government of India Act of 1919 made great changes in the composition of the functions of the provincial legislatures. Each provincial legislative council was to consist of members of the executive council of the governor and elected and nominated members. The size of these provincial legislatures were enlarged. Provision was made for the general and special constituencies. Representation was given to various communities and interests. The Muslims and the Sikhs were given separate representation. Provision was also made for the representation to the landholders, planters, mining interests, commerce and industries and universities. The franchise for the provincial councils were lowered. The normal qualifications of the voter were passed on community, residence, occupation of a house, assessment of income tax, receipt of the military pension, holding a piece of land, etc. Provision was made by the representation of women also. Page 45. The Act of 1919 provided for a hierarchical system of government in the provinces. The Indian ministers were in charge of the transferred subjects and reserved subjects remaining with the governor and the members of the executive council. The ministers were chosen by the governors from the members of the legislature. Provision was made for the election of a speaker of the legislative council. The Act provided 2 lists, viz. Central list and provincial list. The provincial legislature was given the power to make laws on matters given in the provincial list. Its members were given the power of moving and passing resolutions of different subjects. They were also given the power of asking questions and supplementary questions. The Legislature Council was given the power to discuss the provincial budget and to reject the same. However, it had no control over the non-votable items of the budget. If the budget was rejected, the government was authorized to restore the same. There were certain limitations on the legislative powers and the provincial councils. In order to introduce the bills, the previous sanction of the Government of India and the Governor was requested. Even when the bill was passed by the provincial legislator, the government empowered to certify, veto or reserve the same for the consideration of the Governor-General. 16.2, Background of the Government of India Act, 1919. It was evident from the beginning of the reforms that 1909 failed to satisfy the widespread demands of the people. Even the moderate whom the reforms wanted to satisfy were not satisfied by these reforms. Mr. G.K. Gokhale, when as a leader, spoke vehemently about the hollowness of the reforms. The reforms of 1909 had not declared anything about the future policy in India. All these led to the disappointment and discontentment of the people. It was responsible for the rise of militant nationalism. The cult of the bomb became popular. The terrorists became active everywhere. The attempts on the lives of the British officials became common. The Swadeshi movement became powerful. All attempts made by the government to crush these movements failed miserably. It was in the disturbed atmosphere that the World War broke out. India gave generous help to the support of the Britons in its most difficult times. Indian soldiers fought several war fronts and won laurels of victory. All these did not go unnoticed by the government. It was an appreciation of the services rendered by the Indians during the war to meet the widespread demands of the people. Mr. Montague, the Secretary of State for India, made the famous declaration in the British Parliament on 20th August 1917 that the policy of His Majesty's government, with which the government of India are complete accord, is that of increasing association of Indians in every branch of the administration of self-governing institution with a view to the progressive realization of the responsible government in India as an integral part of the British Empire. Page 46. He came to India in November 1917 and went round the country to ascertain the public opinion. In April 1918, he published a report on Indian constitutional reforms. It became the basis for the Montague-Kelmsford reforms, were in the form of the Act and were passed by the Parliament in June 1919, and they came into operation in 1919. 16.3. Montfort reforms. The First World War gave a stimulus to India's struggle for freedom. The Home Rule movement became popular and was spreading widely and vigorously. The Indian revolutionaries were active during the war period. The Muslim League joined hands with the Congress and both formulated the Lucknow Pact. The war was against the British government. Indians were deeply disappointed at the treatment given to them in disregarding their wartime services. It was at this time E.S. Montague, Secretary of State for India, made a historical declaration on 20th August 1917. It assured increasing association of Indians in every branch of administration and progressive realization of responsible government in India. With a view to ascertain the views of various parties and officials, Montague visited India in November. He then finalized his report on Indian constitutional reforms in consultation with the Viceroy, Lord Kelmsford. The Montague scheme was published on 8 July 1918. The Government of India Act was enacted on 23rd December 1919 on the basis of Montfort's scheme. In its preamble, the Act of 1919 contained the policy of the British government towards India. It explained that the policy of the British government was to associate Indians in every branch of administration in increasing numbers to establish responsible government in India as an integral part of the British Empire to progress in these directions and stages. The first part of the Act concerned towards the provincial subjects were divided into two groups, namely the reserved subjects and the transferred subject. The governors were given the powers to appoint some of the members of the Legislative Council as ministers. These ministers, who required to looking after such subjects as local self-government, public health, education and public works. This practice came into the council in 10 provinces. The executive council of the governors was expanded. They were made to contain 50% of Indian members. These councils were to exercise powers over reserve subject. The Act of 1919 expanded the legislatures. They were to consist of the members of the Executive Council and the members elected for the term of 3 years. They had the power to elect their own presidents. The budget was required to be approved by these councils. The Governor General had the power to approve or reject the bill. He could bring in any bill, even without the approval of legislature, if he considered that he was bringing it into public interest. He was required to send such bills to the Governor General. With regard to the transferred subjects, he was required to act according to the advice of the ministers. Page 47. But under extraordinary circumstances, he could reject their advice. While expanding the legislature, reputation was given several communities. The communal representation given to Muslims in 1909 was now extended to such communities such as Sikhs, Europeans, Anglo-Indians and Indian Christians. This kind of partial responsible government in the provinces was known as Dairaki. The second part of the Act 1919 dealt with the central government. Here, no attempts were made to introduce the responsible government of Dairaki. Governor General remained as before responsible to the Secretary of State for India and not the Indian legislature. The Executive Council was enlarged. The Act of 1919 introduced bicameral legislature at the center. They were called Council of State and the Legislative Assembly. The Council of State, or the upper chamber, was mainly a revising body. It consisted of 60 members, and of whom 34 were elected members. The Legislative Assembly was the lower chamber. It consisted of 140 or more members. The term of the office for the members of the Council of State was 5 years, and for the members of the Legislative Assembly was 3 years. The Governor General had the power to dissolve or to extend the tenure of these houses under special circumstances. In case of a deadlock between the two houses, he could summon the joint session of the two houses. Both these houses were to have elected presidents. Some limitations were imposed upon the legislatures. The bills with regard to the public debt, army and foreign affairs were required to have the assent of Governor General before discussed in the houses. Governor General had the power to reject the bills passed by the houses or refer back to them for reconsideration. He could bring in any legislation, and if it considered necessary in the interest of the peace and happiness of the good government of India, even without the approval of the houses. Such legislations are required to be laid before the Parliament under emergencies. Such laws could be borrowed immediately. Some items of the budget were made votable. Defence, foreign affairs and Christianity were beyond jurisdiction of these houses. The Governor General was given the power to spend money in emergencies in the interest of the peace and the good government. The Act removed the restrictions over the number of members in the Executive Council and abolished the distinction between ordinary and extraordinary members. The third part of the Act relates to the Secretary of the State and his Council. Hereafterward, the salary and the expenditure of him to be met by the British government. Till then, it was met out by Indian revenue. This Act established the new part of the High Commissioner for India to look after the Indian affairs in England. Page 48. The fourth part of the Act made a provision for the establishment of Public Service Commission to select able and efficient men for the administrative services of India. The fifth part of the Act made the provision for the appointment of the Commissioner after 10 years to inquire and to report the working of these reforms. This commission was also required to report whether to expand or restrict the responsible government in India. The reforms came vogue in 1921 and were in full force till the Government of India Act of 1935. 16.4 Achievements. Introduction of diarchy was an important milestone in the constitutional history of India. The experiment lasted for about 16 years. The diarchical system of provincial government had the following achievements to its credit. 1. By participating in the process of administration, the Indian legislatures were well acquainted with the art and craft of parliamentary practice. 2. Diarchy served as a training ground to Indian politicians. They had the first-hand training in passing laws. They had the opportunity to critically review the working of the government. 3. Diarchy served as a bridge between autocracy and responsible government. It speeded up the process of provincial autonomy. 4. The Swarajis exposed the anti-national policies of the government without fear or favour. They also expounded the national cause of the Congress. They were unsparing about unjust laws as they were uncompromising in their opposition to the exploitative nature of the ruling race. The fear of criticism kept the executive on its toes always. 5. For the first time, the British bureaucracy was obliged to work under the ministers in transferred departments. This had brought about a welcome change in the attitude approach to the outlook of the officials. 6. The ministers under diarchy were able to implement many popular proposals. They discharged their responsibility with ability. They proved to the hilt that they were capable of running responsible government. Still, in spite of these defects and difficulties, the reforms were a solid and substantial achievement, which made further advance inevitable. In this lay their importance. Page 49. The Montague Chelmsford were received with great disappointment by the people of India. They failed to satisfy once again the whole spread demands of the people. The Indian National Congress, in its special sessions in 1919, dismissed these reforms as inadequate, disappointing. Despite its achievements, diarchy failed. The following factors were responsible for the failure of the new experiment. 1. The principle of administrative dichotomy was defective, unnatural and unscientific. The The sharing of governmental responsibility between elected non-officials and nominated councillors were incongruous, inconsistent and incompatible. 2. The permanent civil servants remained powerful. The members of All India Services, who were under the control of Secretary of State for India, never cared for the ministers. There were instances of insubordination and insubordinate staff to the ministers. 3. The government was a pivot on which the system of diarchy revolved. Being the kingpin of the new set of the ministers had to depend on the tender mercies. In practice, the minister was reduced to an uninviable position of advisers to the government. 4. The ministers were expected to serve two masters, Whig, the Legislative Council, and the Governor. The ministers found it impossible to ride on two horses at the same time. 5. The ministers and the legislative had no control over the strings in the purse, since finance was entrusted with a member of the Governor's Executive Council. As a result, the transferred subjects were given a stepmotherly treatment and the starved of adequate funds. 6. Diarchy was introduced at a time when the country was agitating against the Punjab atrocities and the British betrayal of Turkey. Soon after the war, Indians expected a mountain of reform in the form of dominion status. Hence, it was treated with no contempt. 7. The Swarajis were determined not to work but wreck diarchy. It exposed the hollowness of the reforms. 8. The Conservative Party, which came to power, wanted to slow down the working of diarchy. As a result, the governor showed studied indifference to the ministerial measure and the gubernatorial apathy for aspirations. 9. The Congress opposed the Mountford reforms from the beginning because they were inadequate and incomplete. The country was in commotion. The political climate was not congenial for the successful working for the diarchy. Page 50. 10. The non-cooperation of the Khilafat movement followed the civil disobedient movement rendered diarchy unworkable. The introduction of provincial autonomy in 1937 was confirmed confession of the failure of diarchy. 16.6. Criticism. The Monte Kelmsford reforms in 1919 were widely criticized. 1. The Act gave real power and representation of people only in its limited sense. Election on the wide franchise was an important concession and formed a training ground in representative subjects, but it was not real. But the reforms did not satisfy the Indians. It was found unworkable. Some entered the legislature only to demonstrate it. Naturally, Indian asks for further reforms. Mudiman Committee was appointed to make recommendations, but they were not carried out. 2. Diarchy did not function well. The division of functions were arbitrary and against principles of administration. The actual division was deplorable. K.V. Reddy, who was the Minister of Madras, it was called Madras State then, said the Minister of Development, he was not given control on forests. As Minister of Agriculture, he had nothing to do with irrigation. As a result, the ministers and councillors criticized each other. In case of dispute, the governor was given supportive of the councillors. 4. Position of ministers were weak. He appointed the governor or could be removed by him. He could not be removed by the office by a non-conference vote to the legislature. No party commanded a majority and hence the minister always cared for the governor and carried out his wishes. He was a gainer and he could hope to become a councillor. 5. The governor did not encourage the principle of joint responsibility and the ministers did not work as a team. They always quarrelled with each other. In 1928, Sir Feroz Khan Noon openly criticized his Hindu colleagues. 6. The finance minister was interested only in reverse subjects and the financial needs of these departments were met and departments and transferred subjects were neglected. Sometimes these departments were asked to submit returns or plans which were delayed until it was too late. Page 51. The reforms of 1919 were considered to be utterly inadequate by the Indians. The Indian National Congress, at its annual session in 1919, condemned the reforms as inadequate, unsatisfactory and disappointing. While it asked the British government to take early steps and establish full responsibility of the government in India in accordance with the principle of self-determination, it resolved to work the reforms to as far as may be possible with a view to bring about early establishment of a responsible government in India. 16.7. Let us sum up. In this unit, we have discussed the Montague-Kelmsford reforms in 1919. Lord Montague was appointed as the Secretary of State for India. Soon after entering the office, Lord Montague, who was the sympathetic of India's cause, made his famous declaration in August 1917, promising the gradual development of responsible government in India. 2 years later, in December 1917, the Montague-Kelmsford or the Montfort reforms were passed honoring the promise given in 1917. The Montfort reforms did not alter to any great extent in the home government in London, but in India it introduced several great changes. The Viceroy's Executive Council was enlarged to 6 members, out of which 3 were to be Indians. A bicameral central legislature was set up, a large members being elected. The principle of diarchy was introduced in the provincial legislature for transferred subjects of administration. The reserved subjects, however, remained in the hands of the governor and his councillors, who were responsible to the British Parliament. Further, we will be discussing in this unit that the reforms were bitterly criticized by the Indians because of the special powers reserved for the Viceroy and the governors, the lack of any ministerial responsibility at the centre, the introduction of diarchy in the provinces, and provision for further communal electorates. 16.8 Self-assessment questions. First Roman. Answer the following. 1. Diarchy. 2. Montague. 3. Bicameral central legislature. 4. Transferred subjects. Page 52. Second Roman. Answer the following. 1. Give an outline of the Montague-Kelmsford reform scheme. 2. Describe the main provisions of the Act of 1919. And 3. Review the effects of Montague-Kelmsford schemes on the Indian national movement. 16.9. Books for further study. 1. A.B. Keith, Constitutional History of India. 2. Sharma, A Constitutional History of India. 3. Alexandra Weiss, C.H., Constitutional Development in India. 4. Chatterjee A., The Constitutional Development of India. 5. Salator and B.G. Kunte, Constitutional History of India.